When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Run like a wild man.
I watched you struggle and I watched you wrestle with them angels.
Here he is, from Auburn University, Bo Jackson.
The correct Plainsman Park time. Yeah, it's 9:01 p.m. Central Daylight Time. You're listening to the Origin True Podcast, harbored by your friendly folks at collegeandmagnolia.com. Greetings and salutations, Origin Truthers. It's I, at Son of Crow 2 on Twitter, Son of Crow on Venmo. Here's where you'll find me, coming to you live to tape, joined as always, to one side of me via the magic of the internet, Ryan S. Starrett on Twitter. The S stands for spoiler-free review of Top Gun incoming.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was an 80s movie with 2022 production value, and it was cheesy and the best action, and it was great.
It was, go see it. It's the best. It is exactly what you wanted it to be.
It's the best 80s movie that's come out in 30 years.
Like, they play up the nostalgia without ever like going over the top. It's as good as it gets. Also joining me, a man who doesn't practice Santeria and has got no crystal ball, it's the AU chief. Oh, UTFT around here?
UTFT, baby.
My goodness gracious. That's right, we have not potted since the boys in blue from the other side of Merseyside decided they wanted to stay up in the
park. The senior club in the city, Crow, please.
Now we're talking. So in the last 2 weeks, Chief has seen his boys stave off relegation.
Indeed. It,
just absolutely rescuing victory from the mouth of defeat.
Just did it with one game to go. So that was at least nice.
And then seeing his hated rivals just across the park go from a possible quadruple to not that. Only two trophies. And both of those won on penalty kicks. And both of those kind of the worst two of the two of the four trophies.
Yeah. The two that you just like teams that win a lot don't actually care about. Like Everton would love to win one of those. Most teams in the Premier League would love to win one of those. But if you're, you know, a Champions League team, you don't.
How excited would you be to win a Carabao Cup?
Oh man, shirt off, shirt and pants off.
On a scale of like Florida Cup winning to Champions League win, somewhere in between.
Florida Cup was just pants off. This would be pants and shirt off. We're the reigning Florida Cup champs.
That's right. No team has ever won a Florida Cup and been relegated in the same year.
That's right.
That continues to be the case. So Ryan has no idea what we're talking about, but that's okay. His Nottingham Forest.
Yeah, the tricky trees. Yeah.
His boys have been promoted. I like the sound of that.
I don't know when the season starts, but I'm ready.
Sooner than you'd think.
So, yeah, starts. It literally, it's like a NASCAR length of offseason. Like, are they just always doing games? Yes, yeah. The answer is yes.
At the beginning of August, Ryan. The beginning of August.
That other voice you might have heard, the sound of baseball season, the resident seam head of the podcast, Mr. Drew McCracken.
Good evening, gentlemen.
What's McCrackalackin?
Baseball.
Mm. The McCracken of the bat.
Yeah, very nice. I like that.
Now we're talking.
Now we've really begun here. The guys Kendall Rogers and Aaron Fitt on the D1 website said it best. This is Sunday evening is Christmas Eve for any college baseball fan, because you get the regional host that night. And then it's the evening before you find out the 64 teams that are going to be in the NCAA baseball field. Auburn got a great gift, in my opinion, at least, and to the chagrin of the Oklahomas and the Notre Dames of the world, and got their first regional bid, host bid, since 2010. So it started off as a great evening for any Auburn fan.
Well, mm-hmm. there's two schools that I'm not upset about upsetting. It might be Oklahoma and Notre Dame. Like, who cares?
In that succession as well.
Yeah. Like, who cares what Oklahoma thinks, and who cares what those guys in South Bend think about anything?
Didn't LSU get a chat on the host spot too?
So if you break it down by what the committee did, the SEC had the number one RPI conference, which think of
it just means more.
Yeah, it just means more. And the RPI works exactly like it does in college basketball. They don't so much do the quadrant thing. They still break it down that way, but it's not as big of a deal as it is in college basketball. But the RPI is still a huge indicator. So there were four SEC teams that got host bids. There were four ACC teams that got host bids. Meanwhile, if you look at the entire breakout, both the ACC and the SEC, the number one and number two conferences in RPI, both got nine bids. So they tried to keep those two very even, although you can definitely tell that the tournament committee favors the SEC over the ACC by a long shot. To answer your question, LSU did get a shaft, but if you really want to nitpick, Auburn had the head-to-head series win, and they also didn't get swept throughout the entire season. LSU, just 2 weeks prior, before they went on the road and swept Vanderbilt, got swept at home by Ole Miss. And one of the old monikers of college baseball is, if you want to play at home in June, you need to win at home during the regular season. So I think a sweep by Ole Miss probably put Ole Miss into the tournament and kicked LSU out of hosting a regional. But I think it was very, very close between the group of Tigers.
All right. So let's just, for the people that haven't seen it, the regional field here in Auburn this weekend is going to be Auburn as the one seed, 14th overall, and then bring it in UCLA, Florida State, and Southeast Louisiana. Auburn will face Southeast Louisiana in that first game Friday. How did they get in the tournament? I mean, I see them at 30-29 overall out of, you know, the Southland, you know, low major conference. What happened there to get them in?
So they won their conference tournament. Mesh of college baseball and basketball is pretty much the same. There are a lot of one bid only leagues. And the Southland is one of them. McNeese was kind of projected. Southeast Louisiana and McNeese were 1-2 throughout the year in the Southland. Houston Baptist might have been a thorn in someone's side here or there, but Southeastern went on a run, ended up winning 2 out of 3. The way that the Southland tournament is set up, they play the divisions play two games the weekend prior, play an elimination tournament, and both divisions advance to, or not divisions, but two teams advance to play in a championship series of three games this past weekend. Southeastern actually lost the first game to McNeese by a 6-5 score, I believe, and then reeled off two great wins over McNeese. If you go back and kind of look at some of the Twitter photos, McNeese thought that they were a little bit bigger for their britches and actually wore cowboy chaps to game three, thinking that they would win. So I think they overswagged a little bit. That might have played against them. But Southeast Louisiana went out and did their job and got the win. It was an either-or kind of situation. McNeese probably had the better resume out of the two, but they were definitely not going to get an at-large bid, especially with the bubble as small as it was this year in college baseball.
Nice. So what do you think? What's Auburn's chances here?
I think they have a really good shot. I wrote this morning on College and Mag about kind of gave a quick overview of kind of the key players for each team. The other three, we all kind of know what Auburn needs to do. But pitching is going to be a huge part of this regional. It always is in a double elimination style tournament. You're going to see in that game one, if you have a chance to get off of work early and check it out, you might have the best pitching matchup of the entire tournament with Tyler Messick and let's see if I can remember how to pronounce his name, because they I went over it with someone. I'm blanking on his name right now. It rhymes with magic. It's Ragic, I believe, for UCLA. Parker Messick for FSU is the guy that's going to get the nod in game one. Messick was the 2021 ACC Pitcher of the Year. Ragic is was a closer last year for UCLA. Turned it over in the Cape Cod League and actually became one of the top starters in the Pac-12 this past year.
Ragic, so, what's his first name?
Gosh, why have we got to do that?
Blood Sugar Sex Ragic.
Max Ragic.
Blood Sugar Max Ragic.
Max Ragic.
Perfect.
Maximum Ragic. But he's gone 8-4 so far this year. I can't wait for that matchup. But as far as Auburn goes, it really will, there's so much riding on that Saturday night game. If Auburn can get past Southeast Louisiana, which is never guaranteed for anyone. Unless you've just got the number one overall seed and just get thrown a biscuit. No offense to Alabama State at all in that statement. I think Auburn can win this. They've got to get out of the offensive funk that they've been in since the Kentucky series started. There was something about that rain delay after Alabama and getting the win over Samford in Hoover. The bats just haven't looked the same against Kentucky in the four games that Auburn played against them. So if Auburn can get the offensive firepower that we've seen throughout the year and just flush these last four games, I really like the Tigers' chances lining up. If they can just go 2-0 and get to Sunday without a loss, which stands to reason you only need to win one game after that. I think if Auburn can work out their pitching to get to that 2-0 game or get to the 2-0 championship game on Sunday, I think Auburn's a shoo-in to get to a super regional.
Talk a little bit about Southeastern Louisiana is not a pushover. I think people saw that and initially thought, oh yeah, we're going to smoke those guys. That's a team that, they are a perennial baseball team. Like that's what that school kind of does.
Correct. Got the second best power hitter in this regional.
Correct. They make the NCAA tournament pretty darn near every year.
It's always down to McNeese and Southeast Louisiana. Houston Baptist tried to get into that rotation, but they just haven't been able to break through yet. You said his name. Preston Faulkner is their guy. He is their everything. He is the guy that's always up in the big moment. And to go along with that, they also have a couple of guys on the mound. And Will Kinsler, Adam Guth, who has a 4-1 record. His ERA is a little bit inflated, but you've kind of got to expect that in the Southland Conference just because the fields are a little bit smaller. So you're going to give up a few more runs here and there. But yeah, Kinsler, I kind of expect Kinsler to go. It's not who Southeast has gone with on their Friday nights here lately. But he's the guy who's pitched the most innings for them so far. Preston Faulkner is a guy that I cannot wait to see. I'm really looking forward to see what he does against power five pitching, if you will, because he really hasn't had a chance to do that except against LSU in the midweek. But, you know, we all know what happens in the midweek with a lot of these SEC schools. You're going to get those guys that are working on their stuff or are a couple of pitches away. Or a couple of innings away from really getting it a start on the weekend. So I'm looking forward to seeing what they do against Auburn and either UCLA or Florida State, whoever they play in that second round game for them.
Who do you expect Auburn to throw on Friday night in this game?
If it's me, I think Auburn's been setting this up ever since Hayden Mullins went down to throw Trace Bright. On Friday night. I think that's a good place for Trace and kind of do the Saturday start that we've seen so far this season for Auburn. I think game two is definitely Joseph Gonzalez. There's no reason not to. You're either pitching him for a chance to go to the championship game and just throw everything up against the wall and try to make it work, or you're pitching for your season and you have to have your best guy going at that point. So it absolutely makes all the sense in the world to have probably the guy that I want to say Kyle Peterson said it when breaking things down, but Joseph Gonzalez is Auburn's best, probably been their best arm all season, especially since Hayden went down against Tennessee. So I expected to go Trace, then Joseph, and then after that you're just going to kind of have to see what happens. I could see Carson Swilling. I could see Skipper going in there as well to try and get some long relief and just try to piece together a win. Because I think Florida State and UCLA have a third guy. I don't think they have a fourth guy. So it might be just a beat down drag out if we have to go to a Monday game.
Is there a scenario where, say, Auburn goes up early against Southeastern? Do you pull Trace Bright early and he potentially is available on a Monday game? If that's the case,
you could play with that. It would depend on by how much and when. Like if Auburn's only up 4-0 in the third, no.
What about 13 in the first inning, a la UNC?
If we go a la UNC, yeah, at that point, I could see him going 2 or 3, and then you pull him and, you know, have that extra arm, make it an extended bullpen for him. And then you could go with an Alsop or an Isbell and the rest of the back end reliever guys that that can do some real damage and see where we go from there. But no, you're going to see, and you're going to see that in a lot of these regionals, just because pitching has been down this year in college baseball. Offense has been way, way up. So you're going to see a lot of questionable decisions during the game that makes sense if you think, okay, I'm pitching for Saturday at this point, or I'm pitching for Sunday, or, you know, trying to line up your staff for what's a very interesting weekend, because you don't get a lot of these, this type of work throughout the year of, I need to worry about team B or C, even though team A is in front of me and this is still a game in doubt.
What non-Auburn guy are you looking forward to seeing this weekend? Anybody that stands out?
There are a couple. This is a really tough regional. It's not my regional of death, to steal the World Cup line. That would be in Gainesville. That thing's going to be insane. But I really want to see Preston Faulkner on Friday night. I'm fired up, like I said, for the Masick-Ragic matchup on Friday in the UCLA-FSU game. I'm also looking forward to seeing Jake Palmer with UCLA. He's and another one is I'm going to butcher this name as well, but Michael Corelli, who basically leads UCLA with a .326 batting average. FSU's offense is also something that I want to see. FSU is a very interesting team. Period. I have no love loss for FSU, obviously, since I'm an Auburn baseball fan. But no, they're a very interesting team, especially after – I'm interested to see what they, how they respond, because the NCAA tournament said that they were one of the last four teams in, even though they had a very good RPI throughout the season. Bryce Hubbard – is probably going to be the guy that throws for them on Saturday. He's got a lot of movement on his fastball and on his curve. So I'm really interested to see how either Auburn or Southeast Louisiana or whichever they play respond to how he throws. I'm sorry. I didn't even think about the FSU offense. I started on it and then went off. Jamie Farrer is the guy that I can't wait to see hit for FSU. And if you're looking for an all or nothing guy to watch during the tournament, Alex Toral. He's a transfer from Miami. He's got the Mark Reynolds Award, as I said in the article. 14 home runs leads FSU's team, but he also leads the team in strikeouts with 76. So it's all or nothing for Toral.
He's a Joey Gallo. He's the Joey Gallo player.
Yes, that's another good one. So no, they're big players on all four squads. When you throw in Auburn, we all know those names. But no, they're definitely guys that you could see in the big leagues here pretty soon, both on the mound and at the plate for each team.
Speaking of the big leagues, we're going to see Sonny D in the big leagues anytime soon?
I hope so. I know somebody's going to take a flyer on him. I know somebody's going to take a chance on him. To me, though, Bobby Pierce is the biggest prospect that Auburn has right now, outside in the field at least. I think Joseph Gonzalez is the next arm that you'll see go up for Auburn and follow the path of Tanner Burns and Casey Mize and Keegan Thompson. He's going to be that next guy on the mound. But to me, I really hope that Sonny D. I know he'll get a look because he's an SEC co-player of the year. You just don't get that, and then you quit baseball.
Right.
And his story is fantastic. I don't know if you guys got to see the feature that Ryan McGee with SEC Network did about his Chiari malformation and finding out about that as he was a kid. Really, really good story and a great comeback. For Sonny D, but I think he'll get a shot. I think they're going to want to cut down on his weight a little bit but because he's a classic first baseman, and the word classic in baseball these days doesn't go very far, sadly. So I think he'll definitely get a shot. I'm not sure if he sticks with it and does what they say, I think he can make it to the big leagues. I don't know how long or how long that may take. But to me, Bobby Pierce is the most game ready to go to the big leagues in the shortest amount of time for an Auburn Tiger.
Awesome.
Did we talk about how many home runs Southeast Louisiana hit this year?
We can.
They hit a lot, Ryan.
I don't think Drew Mack knows the actual number.
I was about to say, I don't know that actual
number. They hit a nice amount of home runs, is what Chief wants
Chief,
to
do
say.
You know how many home runs they hit?
Was it 69?
That would be it.
That's a really good guess.
It was either that or 420. So
that'd be a record.
That would be a record. Yes. Yes. As a team, they did hit a nice number of 69 home runs on the year.
Nice.
And of course, even though Preston Faulkner paced them with 17, Evan Keller with 10, Tristan Welsh with 10. So, I mean, it's not just one guy. This goes up and down that lineup. But yeah, no, if there's one thing that Auburn needs to watch out for, you're going to look, of course, the talent level is going to be different. Think of them a lot like an Arkansas.
Okay.
Like as far as hitting the home run, not so much because everybody else on their starting nine is 294 and worse as far as a batting average goes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So and it goes down to 218. So you're going to get a lot of ground outs, fly outs, everything. But if they can get some runners on base, if you're walking them and giving them chances, this is a team that can put numbers up.
All right.
So it's all about limiting that, limiting power hitting, making them hit grounders, mm-hmm. getting easy outs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All right, so as it always is.
What's your plan coming into town? What are you gonna do? You're gonna stop by Mama Goldberg's, get some steamed nachos?
That's without a doubt. That goes without saying. Actually, I spent I'm staying at the lake with a buddy of mine, driving it on Thursday night. We're going to drive into Auburn on Friday morning. I just sent him a photo of the Niffer's parking lot and said 2:30-ish on Friday, and he went, "Well, there goes my diet." So I also have to Mama Goldberg's will be hit up. I've got to try out this Voodoo Wings. Everybody keeps talking about it, so I've got to run by there and get some wings.
It's a chain that is somehow in Auburn and also Las Vegas, and that's kind of the only two locations.
Yeah. Sure, Dontarius Thomas owns that.
Yeah,
well,
okay.
DTS, so I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
And I also have to run by. I cracked open my last gallon of Tumors lemonade that I had in the freezer. So I've got to run by and get about 4 or 5 gallons for the fall, because the Eagle Rare doesn't drink itself. So I've got to do that. But then I've also got to make my way up to the deck at some point, and see our good buddy parking lot, Mr. Ives, and I've got to see if my jolly Aubie is still there.
I'm sure that it is.
If it's not there, I'm going to be a bit hurt that it's not, because I haven't seen it on the SEC broadcast, on the streaming broadcast. So if it's not there for regional time, I don't know when you can have it out. So. I'm fired up. It'll be my first time back in Plainsman Park since I believe 2018, 17 or 18. I haven't had a chance to get down there in a long time. So, I'm fired up for it. I'm so happy for the program that they were able to get this regional. It's a testament to Butch Thompson and the staff and the players. And it's just as Butch said it, if you got to check out the baseball Twitter, and I think I retweeted it in my article. It's just another brick. It's another brick in this program. It's there are a lot of changes coming to college baseball with NCAA rules. It's a great time for Auburn to have this happen and really step forward as a college baseball program and brand.
First time hosting since 2010, right?
That is correct. First time since 2010. The third time, I believe, since this new iteration, the 64 teams. There was also another time that Auburn hosted in 76 that didn't go so well. But Butch said it in his kind of message to the team. There's only been one dog pile on that field by Auburn during an NCAA regional. Let's do everything that we can to make it two. So I think Auburn's going, obviously, Auburn's going to go out and do everything that they can to try and make that happen for the home crowd, because it's already a sellout. It sold out yesterday after the announcement, and tickets are going online. I think I saw all sessions pass going for double the price that they were selling it on. The ticket office box was selling it for. So it's a great thing. It's good that that's happening. It's definitely not Tennessee, where I went online and they were going for $240 for game one for Tennessee. Yeah, against Alabama State. Alabama State, Tennessee, $240 to get in the door.
Can we talk about them for 1 second? Not Alabama State.
Absolutely. Yeah, if you want to talk about any of the other regions.
I would like to discuss, at this point, is anything besides lifting a trophy in Omaha a disappointment for the Vols? It's got to be, right?
Living in Nashville, as I do, and surrounded by Tennessee fans, it absolutely would be.
Like that. This is their 92 dream team level of dominant at this point.
Absolutely. No, it says a whole lot when, to start the broadcast for the NCAA selection show, they went, "So are you taking Tennessee or the field?"
Right.
That lets you know where everybody is. That said, it's really, really hard to win the College World Series.
It's up there with basketball. It's such a tough. It's a tough way to win a tournament.
Well, it's really crazy. You touched on it earlier. Just the different strategy that you have to employ. That you just it is not used at any other time in the season. Basically, it's a totally different thing.
Baseball does funny things.
It's a ball. It's the only sport where the defense has the ball.
Yeah.
Think about that. Just think about that mind, how that messes with you.
The wind can blow and change an entire game on one play.
And I know Stephen Williams is listening, because all the Auburn players listen to this podcast.
We're the Auburn baseball podcast of record.
I mean, we kind of are. But think about the Gainesville Super Regional that Auburn played in a couple of years ago. I know. I don't like to think about it either.
I prefer to think of the Georgia Tech Regional.
That was for the UNC Super Regional. But if Stephen Williams, who never played right field until that year, jumps awkwardly for the ball, it bounces off of his glove and goes over the fence for a home run to win the regional. If Auburn makes that catch and they score a run in that next inning, Florida doesn't, Auburn goes to Omaha.
Right.
Like that was the number one overall seed in Florida.
Oh, crazy.
And they had to have a bounce off the glove to go to Omaha. Like, what other sport does that happen in? I think Tennessee, if they were to lose two games, especially if they lose two games in the regional or super regional, if they lose at home, you might not see Tennessee fans until Josh Heupel wins about three or four games. You might not see them.
Because this is weird, too, because it's kind of out of the blue. Like, it wasn't like Tennessee was super good at baseball 3 years ago.
No, it's all Tony Vitello.
A little bit pent up rage on the basketball team too.
A little bit. But I was talking to a Tennessee fan this morning about this. Is it just me, or does Vitello give off Bruce Pearl at Tennessee vibes?
Okay. I know what you mean.
Everybody knows what I'm talking about. Does anybody else get that vibe? Like, he's not long for there.
Yeah. I mean, it does feel.
Feels
a little bit like that.
It feels weird to me. That's all I'm saying.
Are you saying he's going to be working for ESPN in a few weeks?
I think he's going to be working for ESPN, and when Butch Thompson wants to retire, he'll coach at Auburn. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. No, I could also say he's not making very many friends in the SEC, just with how he is. So that'll also be an interesting storyline to follow along as we continue to go. But no, it's somewhat out of the blue. We knew Vitello was going to be a good recruiter. I don't think we knew he was going to be as good as he is and get them on back on point, because Tennessee's been good in the past. They had Chris Burke, and back in 05, back in the early 2000s, they were a pretty good power, but not to this level. Vitello has taken them to heights that they could only have dreamed of, 10 years ago. Because I can remember in 2017, I believe, Auburn played up their three-game set in Knoxville, and I drove over, paid $5 for my ticket, and they said, where's my seat, to the usher, and the guy looked around and he said, wherever you want. It was me and about 15 other Tennessee fans in Knoxville for a Saturday afternoon Auburn-Tennessee baseball game. No one was there. No one. So he's done a fantastic job of catching lightning in a bottle and getting a fan base that for about 15 years on the football field feels like they've been disrespected, which they haven't done anything about it yet. And so they're getting their cheering out this way. It's not just Preds games anymore for fans of Tennessee sports.
Well, guys, in other baseball news as of right now, breaking news, everyone's favorite baseball team, the Texas Rangers, are now currently 500 on the year.
Better than the Braves.
With a 3-0 win over
my Red Sox.
Tampa Bay Devil Rays. That is 500 baseball this late in the year. We have not seen that around here in a while.
At the end of May.
At the end of May. Made it to June.
Made it to June at 500.
That is big times in North Texas.
Big congrats.
That's big. It's big time.
Guys, Ryan, do you think Auburn's going to win the College World Series?
Of course.
Now we're talking.
It's time to break the peacock out.
Chief, what do you think? Auburn or the field?
Oh, Auburn.
Heck yeah. Drew?
Auburn by 1,000.
Now we're talking.
Is there anybody else?
Let's score some runs, boys. Let's score some runs.
Bing.
Let's take a quick...
How you would pronounce that? Fatal?
What does that mean?
F-E-T-A-U?
Oh, there's an A-U in it, so it's got to be right.
There we go.
There's a reason why gold in the periodic table is A-U.
That's right.
Just so I see what you're saying now, Chief. It took me a bit.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry.
And silver is A-G because the Aggies are poor.
This is true. A very good call.
All right, I think Drew was trying to take a break.
Let's take a quick commercial break. And we are back. 37 minutes and 15 seconds into this classic, instant classic podcast episode. Thanks to Drew McCracken for joining us. It has been always an honor to have him on.
Hopefully we have him on next week to preview Super Regional.
It's gonna be rad. Anytime Drew's on, it's I feel like I'm listening to a podcast that I've chosen to listen to, and it's amazing. Right.
I become a spectator.
Thank you.
Yeah. It's almost like specially produced by the Auburn Network.
Right. Well, I do have the mic flag. But with an Auburn win, it does ensure that I'll be back next.
Yes.
Let's say Tuesday, because we won't.
We got to let you rest on Monday.
Before you go,
I'm going to have to rest because this is going to do a lot of screaming this weekend.
But before you go, I don't think we broke down exactly what needs to happen, like with Auburn. Like, you have to win three games to advance,
yes.
Right?
Okay. Yeah, possibly four. You just can't. So basically, the way it breaks down is you're going to play one game on Friday, one game on Saturday, and then if you win the 2-0 game, you go straight to Sunday evening. If you lose that 2-0 game, you'll play the winner of the loser's bracket game on Sunday morning. So So you really don't want to lose on Friday or Saturday.
Yeah.
You just want to keep winning.
It gets complicated when you lose.
Exactly. You start to have to use pitchers to do things, and you don't want to do that. So if you lose either Friday or Saturday, and you win on either Friday or Saturday, you're going to play in the Sunday morning game, and then you have to turn around, win that game, and then win again Sunday night against the undefeated team.
Like a couple of hours later,
right? Yeah, 45 minutes later, thank you very much.
Okay, yeah.
And then you have to come back on Monday and beat them again. So you could, so as I was telling somebody this morning, the national champion can actually lose four times in this tournament, which is
crazy.
Just fun.
Banana.
Auburn's trying to win every game 9-0. Score one run an inning, don't allow any runs. 9-0.
Interesting point that you bring up, Crow. I've been following Auburn baseball since about the mid-90s. Every time Auburn's held a team to no runs, they've won the game.
Hard facts.
That's what we're talking about.
You get that anywhere else, guys.
You didn't get that anywhere else.
That's deep.
Wait, crap. We didn't. Drew, what time is our first game?
Oh, my. Yeah.
We got to give people the actual information.
Game times this weekend. We actually don't know anything past Friday, just because ESPN owns our rears.
Sports. So, owns sports.
Yeah, all of them. So UCLA and Florida State play at 11. Auburn and Southeast Louisiana play at 6. For those that don't want to do any work on Friday, that Florida State UCLA game will be on ESPN2. And Kyle Peterson, the Kirk Herbstreit of college baseball, will be at Auburn for the entire weekend. It's my mission to try and get a photo with him. So if you just don't want to go onto the NCAA's website, and still need to know the times and everything like that, follow either myself at DrewMack20AU. You can also follow Kevin Ives at AUPPL, who is a fantastic Twitter follow for anything college baseball, but especially Auburn. He'll have the scoring book basically, and I'll be sending out photos, tweets, anything I can get my hands on, because hopefully College Mag is going to get a pass, so we'll be able to give post game pressers and all that sort of fun stuff. We're efforting.
Well, you heard it here first, folks. If you don't want to work, like if you're like me, you don't want to work, you just want to bang on the drum all day, just watch college baseball all day Friday. Thank you again, Drew, for joining the show. Fellas, let's move to round ball. We have somewhat big news. Everyone's fan favorite, Dylan Cardwell, mayor of the jungle, returning. What'd you say?
To the biggest news.
Is that the biggest news?
Well, Walker's gone, so Dylan is now the biggest news.
Yeah. Is he the tallest guy on the team now?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Traore might be taller than him.
Yeah, is Traore not bigger?
I think he's 6'10". Dylan's 7.
Dylan Carroll's 7 feet tall?
He's a 7-footer. Yeah.
This is news to me. He feels 6'10". For some reason.
It's because he doesn't look lanky like a lot of these 7-footers usually are. He's a full-bodied 7-foot.
Well, my professional basketball projections of him have changed just now, just as you tell me this. But he has withdrawn his name from this year's NBA draft, so we know we're not losing him this year. And he is not transferring from Auburn, as far as we know. And so he will be suiting up for your favorite basketball team, America's favorite team, the Auburn Tigers, next year, this fall. Now, the fellow we're waiting on, one Alan Flanagan. By the time you listen to this, most likely he'll have announced if he's coming back or if he's putting his name in the NBA draft.
Yeah.
The deadline is 25 hours from this moment of recording.
And about like 3 months ago, I'd have been like, no way he's going to keep his name in the draft. And then I watched him play in that G League showcase. And I was like, oh, you know what? He might keep his name in. He's and really good.
And before that, the injury, he was a first round projection. Yeah.
And that wouldn't be a problem if if we had happened to get another person to fill that spot that we didn't get. So, right.
Well, so that's the interesting thing. Flan has had a roller coaster of a year and a roller coaster really of a whole career at Auburn.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, his freshman year, he was Isaac Okoro's backup. Didn't really have to do a whole lot playing behind a top five draft pick.
Right.
And then his sophomore year, he became the guy. He's kind of out of necessity. Played point guard, played shooting guard, played a three, did a little bit of everything in the COVID year. And then we kind of all expected him to be that, on-court leader again this year, kind of the veteran, third-year guy, had some NBA draft hype around him. And then he gets hurt. He has the Achilles injury and just never really got it going when he came back at the beginning of SEC play this year.
Yeah.
And expectations are really tough for a player because once everybody thinks you're supposed to be this professional – playing in college, if you're not that, Auburn fans have a tendency of kind of turning on you. He kind of showed me a little bit of a Mario Fannin career. Ryan, may not remember Mario Fannin, but he played football for Auburn in the late.
Yeah, the fumble machine, right?
Well, and that's the thing. He got labeled as this fumble. He actually was a pretty dependable running back. Like, he had a pretty decent career at Auburn, but because of who he played with and because of he had a couple of really good games, so then expectations became high, and he didn't quite meet them. But when it came down to it, like, multiple coaching staffs found him to be a guy that needed to be on the field because he's a really talented player and actually had a really heck of a good career at Auburn.
Yeah, I mean,
go ahead, Chief.
I think that's a decent comp. I think, obviously, Flan has a higher upside than Mario. Mm. Mario was probably never going to be an
NFL player.
And Flan has pretty consistently, I mean, even during the season last year, was getting some like, oh, this guy could be a draft prospect. He could be a second rounder, maybe.
It's easy to see how he becomes a low-end NBA guy or somebody that has a really good international career.
Right.
I mean, it's pretty easy. He's, at his size, at his skill level.
Mario Fannin played for 3 years for the Denver Broncos and then played for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers and the Brooklyn Bolts. He's actually had a five-year professional football career.
That's not, it's not terrible. Sorry, Mario, if you're listening. But Flan, making it to the NBA – especially if you get drafted, if you're predicted to be drafted, because I don't think Mario was drafted, right? Yeah,
correct. Agent. He was not drafted.
Yeah, and there's only two rounds. If you get drafted, you're in. You're in the club, usually, for at least 5 years, I guess. You float around, and then you're going to end up in Europe. And no matter what, I think Flan will have a professional career that spans 10 years at least. Whether it's in the NBA or G League or one of the overseas leagues. So I think he is a step above what you would expect from Mario when Mario was in college. But again, it's people are just, we're so sick of it and they were tired of him and he's a fumble machine, which really wasn't really the case. He was a fairly dependable player. He wasn't Ben Tate.
Ben Tate, second round draft pick, right? Four.
Right, and he wasn't even a Kenny Irons or a Trey Mason after him. He wasn't one of those guys, but he was still a decent running back, and that in that case, I think Flan, I mean, Flan, even bad Flan, is one of the best players that's played at Auburn in 30 years. So,
Can we agree that a Alan Flanagan that is healthy, confident, looks like he did in that G League showcase, that he is the he makes Auburn the best version it can be next season?
Oh, for sure. That guy's amazing. The guy who was in
As frustrated as we were with him at the end of the season, I mean, you know, if that carries over to next season, that's not great. But we should want him on this team. There shouldn't be.
Oh, yeah, you know, yeah. I don't think anybody should be hoping that he leaves. And I think there were a lot of people that were. I mean, there's not just a plug and play character that we can, or character player that we can bring in to
replace. I'm really high on Chance Westry. I think he can be a really good player.
Same.
He's also
Bruce had a ton of success with these guys. Yeah. But we can't hit on every single freshman and turn him into a lottery pick. So,
right.
Is, you know, we have a couple big name freshmen coming in, and it's okay if they're not all first rounders next year.
So, somewhere Bruce just asked someone to hold his beer.
I mean, Chance Westry.
I'll challenge him.
Chance Westry could be a first round. He is the kind of kid who he played at a really good high school, but it was a school where he had to kind of share spotlight. But he's the kind of kid who could come in and shock people with how talented he is. And Traore could be a first round pick very easily. I think there's no doubt about it. I think that's a kid who could be a one and done player. I think most people might even expect him to be one and done. But I would not be shocked if we had two one and done kids again, which is
that'd be great.
I mean, that
insane.
Would be,
but I wouldn't count on it.
Two kids in the draft, three straight years would be pretty nice, and we could probably do it.
Yeah, this Auburn team is at its best if it has a Alan Flanagan that reaches the potential we thought he had last year.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, and I mean, there's just not.
Even if it's for camp reasons, I mean,
there's just not. It would be. I think the reaction some people would be like, "Well, we'll just get another transfer," and it's like, the odds of. Yeah, it's way late. The odds of finding someone that could be as good as Alan Flanagan could be, to come in at this point are just slim to none.
Veterans late in the year into the postseason too. And that's what we didn't have as much of last season.
And I would really hate for Flan's career at Auburn to end with the whimper like it did.
That's true.
It would just feel really bad.
Austin Wiley-ish kind of career where like tons of hype for a while. Maybe not quite as much in his freshman year, but.
One
you would have gotten that potential.
Right. One tournament appearance.
Injuries.
Yeah.
Definitely. I think the more I think about Austin, the more I'm like, man, you're talking about a guy who COVID really hurt. Because I think that team, had they gotten a chance to go to the tournament.
Oh, Flan.
Wiley, man. Flan. Like that whole group.
It's
a whole different story. The Okoro team, yes, the Okoro team.
Samir Dowdy, Jim McCormick,
The hype for Flan coming into the next year after that would have been off the charts, I think. And then having the season that he had, I think he ends up going and being drafted last year rather than this year.
Seeing Samir win a national championship.
Oh, boy. Oh, man. It's music to my ears. That COVID year just sucks.
That team, I mean, people forget about just a bit how absolutely just the amount of swagger that team had they just didn't beat you. They wanted to let you know that they were beating you.
And then clearly weren't as good as the team from the year before, right? And
they were very different, that is for sure.
Yeah, they were very different. They were a team that felt like they could have done really well in the tournament. Like they were guys.
They were a lot like that Miami team that beat Auburn this year.
Yeah, just a bunch of dudes that really been there like the year before. Veterans, like
unbelievable defense.
Samir, fifth year guy at that point?
With his red shirt, I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he was. So you know, you got this older guy who's the clear leader of the team. You got Javon McCormick, who was just a machine.
A junkyard dog.
Yeah. And you got Okoro.
Dangelo Pierre-Paul.
Dangelo.
Okoro, who is a one-and-done kid, top five pick in the draft, but he wasn't the I just play offense, don't play defense type of kid. He was the opposite. He was, no, I'm the best defender in the country.
Right. Yeah. It man, that team could have just made a lot of noise. And
Jalen Williams was just coming into his prime that year too.
And you had Austin Wiley, who was setting like the standard of how many times can one guy get to the free throw line.
Yeah.
per possession, yeah. And how many times can one guy seem to get the a defensive rebound?
And I know it's
is he still the leader all time? Not leader, not all time leader. Is he still just have a ridiculous number of defensive rebounds compared to normal players at this point? I think he does. Like if you look at Wiley's defensive rebound rate, it's still just preposterous, even compared to like Kessler and the guys we had this year.
Right.
It's like, what is this guy doing? He just gets every single defensive rebound.
Yeah, I know it seems frivolous or I don't know what you call it to complain about having that, about how COVID stole that team's postseason from us and them, but it is, I mean, these whole 2 years have just been kind of a not just lives lost, but that sort of life that people, you know, have you didn't get to enjoy your life quite as much because of what happened.
Or if you're a player who needed the tournament to kind of make a name for yourself on a national stage, you didn't get it.
Yeah.
So you kind of were robbed of, they were robbed of an opportunity.
Yeah. That, and you know, who knows, that maybe that could have been Flan's, you know, exit after that, if they just gone and not after that. That was Flan's freshman year. So, but still, it could have helped him build into the next year, like I was saying earlier. And then,
well, speaking of next year, Auburn has got two games already scheduled. We got St. Louis is coming to Auburn, the Billikens, on November 27th. I think it's like the day after Thanksgiving. Is that what that is?
No, it's the day after the Iron Bowl. It's on Sunday.
It's a Sunday. Okay, so it's the Sunday after Thanksgiving.
Be the first Sunday game in Neville Arena history.
I believe that's Christ the King Sunday for all of you on the church calendar.
Big chance I'm not going to make any of these games we're talking about here.
And let's see. We got after that USC, Southern Cal will be on December the 18th.
Another Sunday game.
That's right. What is the deal, Bruce? Well, I get it now. Actually, Christ King Sunday would be the week prior. It's the 20th. It's the week prior Thanksgiving this year. Just in case you really wanted to know. Which means that game is on the first Sunday of Advent.
What it also means is it's the day after the Vegas Bowl.
You're talking about the
18th? Has an SEC tie-in.
The 18th is the day Vegas after the
Bowl on December 17th.
The Vegas Bowl. I really hope that's an all Auburn weekend.
Oh, it better be.
You guys aren't. Where's the national championship this year? What is that?
I'll probably be watching it from my couch. And by that, I mean I probably won't watch it at all.
I mean, what? You don't have your tickets booked?
It is in...
Yeah, my barn is not that hard.
It's actually in Los Angeles.
Oh.
Man.
But not during the time that...
just take a month off.
Just
take a month off.
December for a good 3 weeks.
I'm sure Al will put you up in his house.
Friend of the show, Al, will
Well, at least camp out by the pool.
Yeah. Just camp out at the beach.
Yeah, yeah. You can live on the beach, the hobos.
Live hey, I don't care if you live on the street. Like,
there's real, a tent city just ready there for you, man.
Yeah.
Live the real LA experience.
That is the LA experience. Just go out there, figure it out. Just a kid with a dream in Los Angeles.
Take your best costume, dress up, and go stand out in front of Man's Chinese Theater or TLC Theater, wherever they're calling it these days. And
they gave TLC and, a theater?
Yeah, yeah. Man, just nothing but waterfalls and creep all day long there.
They don't want no scrub standing in front of that theater, I bet.
Well, it's too bad because there's a lot of scrubs outside that theater.
Now, Ryan, you might not know this, but a scrub is a guy who thinks he's fly. He's also known as a buster.
DLC the channel?
Oh, no, Ryan.
No, it's not.
we're talking T-Boys.
We're talking Left Eye.
Chili.
In Chili. Man. One of whom burned down Atlanta Falcon Andre Rison's house.
That's right. That's right. You should know. This Come is, on, this man. Things, these are things you should know, Ryan.
Rise up.
All right, guys. With that, Ryan's going to go listen to TLC's top hits on Spotify, hopefully. Educate himself. If you have your favorite TLC song you want Ryan to listen to, send him a tweet at Ryan S. Starrett. For the rest of us, we'll see you next week.
Keep on cocking.
Have a wriggle weekend.